Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hello and welcome to the Runners World Podcast with me, Rick Pearson.
And me, Ben Hobson.
Today we're speaking with Team GB's 400-metre star, Matt Hudson-Smith.
And we've been joined by Kate Carter.
Hey.
Hi.
Yeah.
Hey, look, 400 metres. Ben, have you ever had a go, you know, just like full-on attempt at the 400 metres?
No. Sports day at school, which was dreadful. I mean, probably immediately what everyone else thinks about. I'm absolutely not in any way got any of the natural ability when it comes to sprinting. I'd quite like to learn, but no, only from like 400 meter repeats from like track sessions the only experience. But then you're always doing it like with, there's more coming.
Yeah, exactly.
So you're never really like, oh, right, well, this is it.
But Kate, you've done this. You've been a 400 meter star.
No, definitely not a star. I used to do this league where the team got points for every event. So it was like, you know, the full track and field program. I was quite often the entire women's team was me. So like they were like, just do everything. So I do like as many events as I could in one evening, like a kind of really late
or
decathlon.
Performing mediocre in all of them.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, I'd always have one because there'd always be one that was like my
your event
thing. Right. So that'd probably be like 1500 or something like that.
Yeah.
And then the rest, like, yeah, I do like, I think on my power of 10, I've got like the world's worst long jump.
Nice.
It's like almost embarrassing.
That's quality.
Like, they should have an asterisk by it.
What about you, Rick?
Well, I remember that this is a while ago, but I think it was like one of the big anniversaries of the 4 minute mile. And another running publication I work for, this is a long time ago, we thought, could we do a 4 minute mile as a relay? So obviously that's basically like 60 second laps of a track. And we didn't do it. A couple of people went under 60, both were very good runners, and I did 62.
Mm. Can you not claim that you did the, because it's technically 1609 metres, so yours was the 409 metres?
That would actually work out probably all right. But yeah, it was, and I was probably faster and fitter then than I am now. So actually, I think going under a minute for kind of amateur runners actually quite hard, which makes it makes you realize like if someone was running a minute and you watched it on TV, you'd be like, oh wow, someone's walking on the track.
Yeah,
you
know? Oh yeah.
But it's kind of like, so when you see someone like Matt Hudson-Smith running, it's like occasionally I think, where would I have been on that track? I would have been
still
about 200 meters by now.
Yeah, I mean, to begin with, falling over, picking yourself up after trying to use blocks is probably where you
but I like it as a distance because it's very, there's a kind of the kind of completest in me. I mean, there's something about running like just a full circle of a track, and it's just off sprinting, isn't it? You've got to go off about 95%, and if you get it wrong, the consequences are quite immediate and severe.
Well, his training was enlightening because he said the word lactate
Friday
maybe 30 times. which is just not a word you want to hear at all that often. So it's like, yeah, there's a lot of that going on.
Exactly.
But no, I think that with the Olympics coming, there might well be some sort of ongoing 400 meter testing. I think I think that everyone at Runners World might adopt a
take on an Olympic
track event and see how well we can fare in a sort of a month's progression or so. I don't know, but it's whoever's got 400 is now, which I'm going to claim is mine. Yeah. Slight advantage because I've got some tips now.
What is the, let's say we won't go longer than 15. Okay,
so
what's the ultimate short straw in track running, do you think?
400?
400 is up there, isn't it?
I think it's 800.
800, maybe.
Yeah.
400 hurdles is bad as well.
We're not doing that.
I mean, if 400...
No, someone will hurt themselves.
If 400 is lactic hell, then surely 800 is just
double
lactic hell.
Yeah. Yeah, I think 800... Yeah.
I mean, there's all this kind of, there's always like these, there's just like chat about the hardest event in track and field. And yeah, the 800 and the 400 and the 400 hurdles get mentioned a lot. And and obviously then you've got like things like pole vault, which is just technically just mind-blowingly difficult. Especially as you come in. Let's not do that.
How do you get, it's one of those sort of things where like, there are certain ski jump events, like how do you get good at it? Do you mean like what's the learning process? Do you just go like you just do it one day?
Yeah,
I know. I mean, I know because I'm a bit obsessed with pole vault. With pole vault, almost everybody who goes into it has a background in sprinting plus gymnastics. That's how you get into it. It's like a kid.
Right. Doesn't help me at all, actually.
No, neither.
Neither of those things.
Gymnastics. I mean, I mastered the forward roll. Does that count?
Maybe at the end, off the mat.
Yeah, the celebration bit. Could do that bit.
But I wonder, like, do you reckon if you got good at 400, just to dwell on 400 a second?
Yeah, let's do it.
Do you think it would have good knock-on implications for something like 5K if you get your 400 time down? Or maybe it's just too different a world?
I think it doesn't. It really depends whether you're just, like, trying to get your 400 down as, but still as repeats.
Yeah.
Or a 400 sprint. Because, like, talking to Matt, you really realise how different the training is. Like, a session could be 300s or and that's a big a lot, and there'll be lots of rest between that, whereas for us mostly as distance runners, that would, like, we wouldn't be able to run that hard enough
for it to be,
for that to feel like the session that it would be for for a proper 400 meter runner. Feel like we'd just done it at 5k pace and then bailed.
I was thinking I was moving then. You weren't. It was very slow. Well, I mean, everyone will hear, but I think this, the technical elements to the event, which Matt talks about, were really interesting, because none of it's creeped into my head at all, because I don't do it. So it's just a bit like, oh, wow, no, it's really like such precision with the drills and the training, and then like the lane dictating your tactic for the race, and all these sorts of things. It's like, oh, it's really it all the elements that you absolutely have for any race, really, that we're all familiar with, are like the technical elements of running a marathon. Oh, you've got to get your fueling right, and you've got to, you know, there's all these little combination of things, but you kind of think 400 meters, oh, well, it's just go, isn't it? But it's not, it's so nuanced. No, and
I follow a few track coaches and stuff, many in the States, from on Twitter, just because they post really interesting stuff, and it's kind of like, it's like a glimpse into a different world, which I don't really understand, but it's just fascinating. There's a guy called Stuart McMillan, who's like the great sprint coach, and he posts these videos of like some of his athletes doing kind of specific drills, or like there's like diagrams almost, you know, when you can see, I don't know what it's called, and you have a photo and you can see the same person at different stages and so on, and you can see, like, he'll be like, oh, you can see the difference that this training has made in this phase, and I'm like, wow, that's like next level analysis. To me, that's just like,
I think you also get, you do get an improvement in form just from engaging properly in fast running.
Oh, yeah.
Even like the amateur could do that. And it's actually almost, you can kind of tell people whose training involves quite a bit of fast running, because their form just tends to be better.
Back to your point about like, would it improve your 5K time? And I don't think that any of the, like, I don't think from like the aerobic side of stuff would make any real difference. But I think the technical aspects of how you run and your form and your muscles, that would be the great advantage of doing any of this sort of proper sprint work.
Yeah, yeah.
Is that you just end up,
sort of finds its way into your longer form.
You would naturally, like, you pick your leg up more. You know, you're going to use your hamstrings more effectively because you're running more at pace, and you don't really ever, I mean, unless you are obviously very, very good, but, you know, you watch the running form of every amateur runner, and there's all the dynamic isn't there that you see on a sprint, and you do more of that, your body naturally becomes...
Yeah. I guess the sort of version of it that it's not really a version of it, but like what an amateur runner would do, perhaps, over, especially if we're kind of like in our equivalent of non-competition phase, like base phase over winter, you might go and do like hill reps. And if you're following a plan or something, it might be like, they might be quite like short and sharp. So it might be only like 10-15 seconds, but like really kind of, and obviously with a hill rep, you know, the time is like irrelevant. But like, you're not even really, but the point is, it's like leg turnover, fast, you know, real power, trying to build that.
Yeah.
And that's kind of why you would do that, to keep that element, I guess, in your running.
I think it also, like, I remember when I tried to do, I was trying to train for the sub 5 minute mile, never quite did it. But it kind of recalibrates what you think fast is. Well, because I remember thinking at the time, well, I'm trying to run a mile in, and you get a sense of what a 5 minute mile feels like, just over like 400 meters or whatever. And I was like, if I had a bash at 5K now, six minute mile would at that point would have felt like, oh right, there's quite a big difference here, like this isn't me flat out. Whereas if you never engage with something that's quicker than that, you can be shocked by what like 10 mile pace feels like, or 10k or 5k. So I think maybe engaging with the track, that's another good reason.
Definitely.
For it.
But I guess that's the divide, isn't it? Because even mile training, that is middle distance.
Yeah.
Whereas 400, you know,
it's sprinting, isn't it? Yeah.
I guess there's a different, like, because 400 meter runners, well, like 800 meters is the divide, I guess. Because you do get people who double at 4 and 8.
Yeah.
But then you get the people who are 100, 200 and maybe go to 4. That's their wheelhouse.
Yes.
And then with like, you've got 8, you're going to 15, you're not gonna, you know, so it's a real kind of divide. And then there's like such a difference at that point in how people train, because if you're doing mile training, you're doing volume.
And we talked to Keely Hodgkin on here before, and her training's about 30 miles a week. She actually trains almost like you'd imagine a 400 person trains. So I think 800, you can get those people who are like,
yeah,
and then someone who's like, oh, I do 60 miles a week, and it's like, oh okay, cool, you're almost training like a 5K runner or something.
Yeah, like I reckon, you know, when you get to like Laura Muir or someone, she'll sometimes drop down and do an 800 for the speed work almost element. But her training, I imagine, is way more volume than that, certainly more than Keely.
Well, I just think you'll never get a 400 metre runner taking on the marathon and setting a world record.
Oh.
I know that just happened, didn't it?
Yeah, that's true, yeah.
But there must be a lot of previous ones as well, because the traditional route to marathon used to be via the track. So
being incredibly flippant.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Hey, well, look, on that lovely note, Ben,
let's
get on Matt Hudson-Smith to tell us more about the 400 metres.
Let's do it. Guest of the week. Here in the studio, guest of the week. Sometimes on the phone, could be an athlete.
Matt, thanks so much for your time. Am I right in thinking that when you were young, you had to choose a little bit between football and athletics? And if so, was that quite a tough decision? Because I know how popular football is for most young people in this country.
Yeah, it's quite right. I used to do football. I think I used to play football since I was 4 years old, and I played for Wolverhampton Wanderers at the age of 10. And then, so it got pretty good. So Wolverhampton Wanderers, Warsaw, and then a lot around Wolverhampton and Birmingham area. And I made the decision around about 16. It was quite hard, to be fair. Obviously, like, football was my first love, and like, I did track just to like kind of help with football at that time. Because the whole idea was, if I did do track, it'll help me with being faster than other players and with fitness. So that's the whole reason why I did track at that time. And I think I made the decision at 16 because, one, I kept getting taken out by other football players. I didn't really like that. And then, two, like, I kind of fell in love with track just because, like, the process and, you know, having the power to, like, change it in my own, like, destiny, if that makes sense. Like, with football, you have to rely on, like, 10 other players, whereas track is, like, solely on yourself. And I kind of like the idea of it, in the sense that if I mess up, it's on me. Like, but in football, like, you can have the best game in the world, but if someone messes up, then you could lose, like, 6-0 almost, or, like, yeah. So I kind of enjoyed, like, the process of just the grind of track, really, and then, yeah, just sole responsibility of being, if you win, you get all the glory.
yeah. Like that.
But unfortunately, unlike football, you probably don't get the paycheck.
No. It's a shame, isn't it? It's like a 24-hour job with track, like maybe 4 hours with football.
Yeah.
So when you were training for football, but then you were training for the athletics, what was it about the training that you liked? Because we talked to a lot of people about how they structured their training for athletics, and it's like it's very rigorous, like, you know, it's day in, day out rigorous sort of stuff. But you seem to like that. So are you a man who, like, do you like that formula? Do you like the structure? Do you like all of that sort of stuff?
Especially with the 400 meters, I think I kind of got catfished, because when I did the whole transition to track, we had a thing called Star Track. So it was like, it was more like, I don't know if you know what sports hall was, where it's an indoor facility, you run back and forth, you have like bean bags, and it was just very much fun and playful. And then obviously, as you get older, there's the transition to like the 100 meters and the 200 meters. And then I kind of got shooing into the 400 because one of the people didn't show up for the 4x4. At least for ignorance, really, of, you know, oh, Matt, you're quite quick. You want to do 4x4, and this is for like YDL, which is Young Athletes League, for my club, Birchwood Harris. And they were like, you're pretty quick. Do you want to try 400? So I did it. And it was obvious. It went pretty well, obviously.
At the time, I was like, still doing it.
Yeah, I'm still doing it. At the time, I was like, oh, wow, this is like very painful. And yeah, like, I'm not going to lie. Is fun the training, I think, mainly because you have like a group setting with you, if that makes sense. So we have some of the best training partners in the world training with you, and you're kind of just going through the grind with each other. So the structure of it, like you said, is fun. Just turning up, doing something that you love every day, and just, yeah, not many people can say like they train. They work with something that they enjoy, so I kind of just enjoy it, try and enjoy it as much as I can, really.
Was 100 and 200 your favourite then? I mean, I can see that's obviously, like, for a footballer's point of view, you're probably never going to have to run 200 metres in a row, right? No.
Like, yeah.
So 400 must have been, like, distance.
Yeah, and one of my mentors, Christine O'Hurgu, always says, the 400 doesn't, you don't choose the 400, the 400 chooses you.
it sounds very kind of like Star Wars, doesn't it?
Yeah. Be chosen. Yeah.
It's genuinely funny because all the 400 meter athletes, when they talk about the 400, it's like, oh yeah, I wasn't quick enough for the 100 or 200. And wow. I don't blame people like Fred or Michael Norman who went down to the 100 and 200 because they like can run 9 and 19. So it's like, why not? You know what I mean?
I think you're doing yourself a disservice there. I think that, you know, it's obviously a distance that takes a certain measure. I think that all the people doing the 100 metres and the 200s are slightly afraid. I think, yes. I think that's it.
I always say it's the man killer as well. It definitely sets the men from the boys with the 400. And I saw like an interview saying, was it a thing me saying the 800 is the hardest event? And I was like, nah, you should know. You know, because yeah. I think as well, it's funny because that people say like the hardest events is the 4 hurdles and the 8, but I say the 400 hurdles training is harder than the 400. I'll give them that. But I think with the hurdles, it breaks up the race. And then the 8, unless you're front running it, you can always dictate the race. Whereas 400, it's like you get the 300. No matter how you do it, you're going to get lactic. So me personally, I think the 400 is the hardest event, and it's definitely the man killer event.
What does it like? A typical training week look like for you, Matt? Like, how much are you running every day? How much of it's in the gym? Can you give us a sense of it?
Yeah. Do you want it? So it honestly changes. Do you want it in the full base where there's a lot of running, or do you want it in the competition? Like, how would you want me?
Probably the former. Yeah. So when there's lots of running.
So the full base. Oh, okay. So Monday is. So we're on the grass a lot. To begin with, and on the Monday is a lot of running, so your 500s, your 600s, repeat runs, and a lot of distance but a lot of lactic work. So maybe like a 500 times 3 short recovery, something like that. Then Tuesday is like technical running, fasts but over like wickets, just working on technique and like acceleration maybe, or upright running. That's everyone's favorite day. And then Wednesday is very, very much catered towards the individual. So for instance, because I'm not a speed runner, but I'm not a strength runner, I'm more of an in-between, so I need the strength but I also need the speed. So I might do like a 20 minute run, or I'll be in the pool doing aqua running or something like that. And then Thursday, again, one of our favorite days because it's technical runs. So we're on the grass doing wickets, accelerations, maybe some 150s, maybe 250s, like something more speed based. Then Fridays is everyone's hardest day because it's the lactic day. So it's like maybe 300s, 350s, and something like that. And Saturday is this active recovery. So some people do Pilates, some people do jogging or pool. Honestly, it depends on the individual. So that's pretty much my week.
Yeah, lactic day doesn't. It's a bad name, isn't it? They need to rebrand that one, don't they?
So yeah, the Mondays and Fridays. Yeah, Mondays and Fridays is definitely. There's no like you're gonna run and it's gonna be painful. Everyone like Tuesdays and the Thursday, everyone's like. It's funny because Monday and Friday nobody talks in training. It's silent. Tuesday and Thursday, everyone's like just talking, having the time of their life.
Oh, that's good.
I'm interested. So when you go then into the competition phase, and particularly when you've got a lot of a lot of events back to back, how do you sort of manage that? Like if you've got Diamond Leagues lined up.
So let's just say I give the most reason. I'll give one a lead up to like Worlds, for instance. It's very much a lot of it's more based on recovery in itself. So we'll probably run maybe 2 days within the week. So maybe like we'll have like a lactic day, which is the Monday, and then the speed day, which is the Tuesday. So say if the race is on the Friday, for instance, Monday is probably, let's just say, we did 3 300s, race pace, but short recovery. And then on the Tuesday was like blocks, then there was just technical. And then Wednesday, recover. It's because recovery is key. And then Thursday we have we call it regen, but it's basically like you turn up to the track and you do a warm up and you two block starts and then like a 150, which is supposed to emulate your last 150 of the 400, and that's pretty much it. So it's completely different. Like the amount of running that we do compared to in the four base is dramatically different, because instead of like six runs, it may be three or two runs, or repeats, it'll just be like maybe one hard run or something like that, maybe like a one hard broken run. So it's completely different, like night and day.
This is the Runner's World podcast.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
It's really interesting how much technical work there is for a sprint event like that, I think, because obviously a lot of our listeners will be, the shortest races they do may well be like 5K or something, and the training, however hard you do it, it's mostly just running.
Yeah.
Whereas obviously the proportion of like technical stuff you're doing with drills and technique and so on is, and it's really like very scientific now, isn't it? It's not just like... the way distance runners do it at the track. It's a lot of filming, right, and analysis and so on afterwards.
The beautiful thing about 400 meters is there's so many ways to like skin a cat. So how I might run a 400 is completely different to how someone in, let's just say, lane six runs 400 meters. And it really is, it's such an individualized sport, because let's just say with the 100 meters, like one step and you lost the race almost. But let's just say 400 meters, I could mess up the first 100 meters, but if I got to 300 in the most efficient way for me, I can make it up. And claw it back and win the race almost. So it's very much a individualized event again, which is kind of what I love, because going back to like the footballs, it's like it's all on me and it's very individualized. So it's personal to me rather than certain events is this very science. You say it's very scientific, but it's like scientifically based on yourself. So it's like almost the perfect way to describe a 400 meters is like almost like stay in your lane. Like you've got to stay in your lane, and let's just say if the person in the lane inside you like goes up on you in the first 100 meters, you better not panic, because if you do, you'd mess up your race almost.
Yeah. It's that sort of dialed in approach to it, but being very, very singular in just you rather than like trying to watch everyone. So in another like track events, you kind of like the race can be slightly dictated, like 800s and 1500, you kind of get that sense of just like, oh, someone can go out big and hard and you can kind of like, oh, they're doing it that way, you know, this way this time. But 400 meters seems to be way more like, actually no, your race is the one, you have to run it exactly how you want to run it and regardless of what everyone else is doing.
Yeah, most definitely. Like for instance, one of the perfect examples is Olympics with Wade, when he ran the world record. It was in lane 8, but he just ran his own race. And that's kind of what the 400 meters is about. It's like almost running your race in the most efficient way possible, which is tailored towards you, because everyone's going to run their race. It's a matter of, it's like chess almost. You've got to do your own strategy, and whoever has the best strategy almost wins the race. And like at the end of the day, it's like almost poker as well, because at 300 meters or 350, everyone's feeling the same amount of pain. It's about who can hold it or who's got the mental capability almost to finish the race. So
Matt, when you look back now at the silver medal in the world champs, particularly when you talked about having quite a serious Achilles injury, how do you view that now? Are you proud of what you did done? Is there a bit of disappointment, and how does that kind of fuel you for next year?
It was a bit of mixed emotions, really. Looking back on it, I'm really proud of the people who helped me, one, get to that position, because I think we put in a lot of work, especially to the lead up to Worlds, because it's quite funny that at World Champs, their whole idea was, you know, let's just at least get to Worlds and try and get to the final. And I remember coming off Worlds, finishing the race and coming off in the stretcher. or the little wheelchair, and so I was happy, you know, I was proud of the fact that, you know, I got the medal, but I was also a little bit, I'll be lying if I said I wasn't a little bit disappointed, because I was like, and the race was kind of in my hands, but it was kind of my body that kind of let me down in a sense, because my calf blew up in the last 50. But it's just like, you know, you at the end of the day, you got to have some sort of gratitude, because not many people can say they're world medalists. So it was mixed emotions, but it also gave me the fire for Olympics to know that, okay, I can compete with these guys, and I can compete with these guys not my best. So it was like, what can I do at my best? So I'm basically putting all my energy, especially into this year, into being the best version of myself for the Olympics. Because yes, Worlds is a big thing, but obviously Olympics is the Olympics, and for any sport, that's the pinnacle of the sport. So that's basically gave me the motivation now to be on my best for Olympics.
How have you managed all the setbacks over the and the troubles that you've gone through? Because I feel like that's such an important part of the modern day sort of athlete, and how people can sort of relate to overcoming hardship and using running in some capacity to sort of like do that.
Yeah, most definitely. I think I use running that as almost a getaway as well. Like, I think for me, running, I wouldn't say I'm the most expressive or sometimes the most talkative person, but when I'm on the track, I find it a way to like express myself, if that makes sense. Like I get really shy and I'm like, sometimes I don't really talk, but like, when I'm on the track, I'm a completely different person. People are like, oh, you're so expressive, or you're so, like, you know, deep down, I'm not really quite quiet. But, like, it's just more of an expression. So it's like a getaway for me. Like, I feel like I'm more free and I can be myself. And, like, with the whole, as well, I've taken, like, the mental side of sport a lot more seriously, because there's a lot more factors to it than just running. So for instance, now I have like a sports psychologist, now got sports psychologist as actual psychiatrist, where it's like outside of sport, because it's not just you rock up the training and that's it. Like there's a whole facet to it. Like you've got to, it's the mental of literally like the everyday tools, like the social side, because you, like for instance, I live in America, so all my family's in England, so I don't really see my nephews growing up. I don't really get to like go out with my friends as much, and it's like a mental tool at all, because it's like you feel like you're missing out. So like almost the whole mental aspect is a little bit draining. So the idea of having like a psychologist to help you, you know, get through that and help like almost just navigate life is great, because it helps, you know, just not just in the sport but outside sport, and then obviously the sports psychologist as well, because again, I think every athlete can tell you that the race is won or lost in the core. So the sports psychologist just basically just helps navigate like the mental aspect, because again, a lot of every athlete will tell you they're not scared, but they are scared. You can see in their face, yeah, but yeah, it's just like whoever like navigates their nerves the best. So the psychologist and the sports psych is basically helps you with your nerves, because nerves, like what I've learned is nerves is good. It's how you manage the nerves is what what helps you win, basically. So yes, just navigating the nerves, really.
And you've been quite open about talking about, particularly I think it was 2020, you were struggling a bit with as I'm sure a lot of people relate to, the pandemic and so on, with your mental health. So how did you, was that like part of the whole kind of lockdown and not being able to
because I was in the lockdown, I was stuck in America. And obviously, I had a visa, so you couldn't really go back and forth. So it's like it was just in a dark, in a room by yourself. You don't really know anyone. Can't really see your family. Mm. So it was a bit of a mental toll. But after that, like I said, getting the like psychiatrist and helping, just the whole mental strain and aspect of that was like a great deal. And I didn't really understand. Because, like I said, I keep a lot of things to myself and I'm quite quiet. So, you know, unloading on someone who you don't really know helped in that sense. So, yeah, it helped a lot, to be fair.
Yeah.
I mean, that's great, because a lot of people wouldn't seek help. Lots of people would have just doubled down on being quiet and that's what the end result probably wouldn't have been particularly great. So it's always great to hear that someone's, you know, found something to help themselves.
Yeah, most definitely. And I recommend it to everyone, you know, just because life in general is hard for everyone, whether you're rich, poor, or whether you're going through something or whether you're not. There's always some sort of like, everyone's going through something. And so like, and you're not able to always talk to like, I don't know, your friends or family, because you don't feel like you might feel like you're being judged. So the whole idea of having a psychiatrist or like some sort of person in that field who doesn't know you, and they're not when you talk to them, they're not supposed to judge you. It's like great, because you can actually unload and you can actually say how you really feel. So yeah,
I think it's interesting. You kind of, it's a really good point that like you started saying like you love running and it's a gift to be able to do that for your, essentially for your job, and you do that every day. But at the same time, you've also, as other elite athletes do, you've given up a lot. You know, you've moved to America. You don't have your family there. You don't have the support network around you that other people may do. So I think, you know, it's a kind of good sort of thing for people generally to realize.
Definitely.
That it's hard.
Yeah.
It's really
like,
hard.
It's just ridiculously hard. And I think the biggest thing as well, one of the biggest things, like, every elite athlete at some point has made a sacrifice, you know. So it's like you have to be the best, you have to sacrifice. And yeah, just sacrifice is one of the key things in the sport, really and truly.
Right, Matt, for anyone listening who wants to run a good 400 metres, and I include myself in this, I was always like, oh, can I break the minute? Which is probably a bit of a joke to when you talk to an elite athlete. Like, can I break the minute? I got to 62 seconds once, but I think I'm running it wrong. So what advice could you have to the, let's call them the enthusiastic amateur when it comes to 400 metre running?
The first thing I'll ask you is, are you like, how do you train? Are you a speed runner or are you a strength runner? So that'll be my first question. And I can
definitely not a speed runner, I'd say. Definitely not a speed runner.
Not sure I can get both, either.
Yeah, neither.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. I'd say, honestly, build into it. Like, but I'd say the first 50, I'll say attack and then build into it. I'll say if you're more of a strength, I'll say your biggest advantage would be that you're strong. So I'll tell you to get up to speed for the first 50, control the back straight, and then from 200 to 300, that's where you make your move. That's what I'd say. And then last 100,
all right,
like, hold on.
Just hanging on, isn't it, at that
point?
I think that's
more me, Rick. I think you're naturally faster, so you're more of a speed guy. I would need to...
Let's hear it for the speed. Let's imagine that I'm a speed person, Matt. Just, how would I run it then?
How you do that? Attack the first 100 very hard, relax down in the back straight. And then you have to, where the 180 is where you would make your move, because you would have the biggest speed reserve. So if you're a speed runner, for instance, you have the almost the advantage of you going through 200 is like this for you. It's like a walk. So for instance, I'll do a speed, someone who can run like a low 20 or 19. For instance, if they can go through in 21 with them, it's a lot more comfortable compared to someone whose PB is like 20.5, 20.6, them going through in 21. Because we say it's like too close to the sun almost. And if you fly too close to the sun, then you're going to hit lactic. So we're a lot quicker than compared to someone who's running 19. You can walk 21 seconds almost. So
yeah,
have to go that way.
That's so interesting. Yeah. And someone who's like yourself, who's a hybrid, how do you approach it then?
I can run it both ways. So when I first joined, when I first started doing the 400 meters, I was very much a strength runner in the sense that I'll get to 300 probably around sixth place, but I'd be able to walk people down. But now I'm a lot quicker than people expect. So now I'm probably, I put myself in contention more compared to where I was before. And like, I'm there to be shot, if you know what I mean. So
that's
how I run it now.
Nice. Interesting. There you go.
So when does sort of like the wind? I mean, I'm sure you're like sort of knee deep into Paris prep already. But like, when's like what stages are you at with that? Like, where's your like? All right, this is the benchmark I need to be at for that for Paris. Like, what are you working towards now?
For me, getting strong and being healthy. That's the biggest thing.
Well, that's good.
I've got all the prep ready. I'm taking gym a lot more seriously, and it's not like lifting, just more like rehabby type gym, and a lot more focus in 200s this year. I want to get my 200 meter PB down and just be more consistent, lower, just be way more consistent in the four, run a lot more 44 lows, and yeah, get down to the 43s.
If you're fit and healthy, will you do the indoor season in the sort of spring and winter, spring?
That's not in the plans, but the plan, I think, for me as of right now, World Relays, Diamond Leagues, and nice. Olympics, obviously. Yeah.
Well, Matt, we wish you all the very best in all your running. Thanks so much for making the time to come on the Runners World podcast and chatting to us.
Thanks
for having me. When I break 60 seconds, I'll let you know, okay?
Message me straight.
Be thanking
Instagram.
You.
Yeah. Me and Rick will go head to head. I'll apply the strength, you can do the speed, and we'll see who wins.
And I'll just stand by the side with neither.
That's what
I can see it as well.
All right, yeah, cool.
Thank you, Matt. Thank you.
Thank you.
So that brings us to the end of this week's Runners World podcast. Huge thanks to our special guest, Matt Hudson-Smith, and to you, of course, for listening.
You can subscribe to 3 issues of Runners World for just £5. Head to runnersworld.com/UK/podcast offer to get this exclusive listener offer. Subscribe to this podcast. I'm sure you are already because you're listening, but if you haven't, do it. And you'll hear from us again next week.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.